Let us recount for our colleagues what epidemiology as a major research method and as the basic science of prevention contributes to the community and to the public health. Epidemiology offers the evidence of population differences in disease rates and risk, with clear documentation of the dynamic change in these rates over time. This is the prime evidence that mass cultural phenomena determine the population rates of disease. This is the central fact of prevention. This is the major contribution of epidemiology leading to the possibility of prevention in the whole population. Epidemiological monitoring offers descriptors of CVD, of deaths and survival outside and inside the hospital, displays of risk factor distributions and their behavioral counterparts and their changes over time. This dynamic approach to surveillance seeks to explain the contribution of lifestyle changes and medical advances to the changing death rates. With the risk factors, epidemiology offers its main contribution to primary and secondary prevention in individuals through simple classifications of relative risk. It also gives estimates of the proportion of excess cases in the population attributable to single and combined risk factors, indicating the potential effect on public health if the risk factors were to be controlled. Epidemiological pathology confirms the findings about risk factors in the living. It shows the necessity for severe atherosclerosis in order that there be a major population burden of coronary disease. It offers tracking techniques that establish the precursors of atherosclerosis already in youth, amenable to early intervention. It provides innovative methods in large numbers to test hypotheses rapidly of causes and prevention, to measure preventive effects and their lag times. It provides useful tools to clinicians, concepts of sensitivity, specificity, predictive power, and statistical methods for their researches. Epidemiology provides clues to mechanisms and stimulates whole new areas of bench and clinical science and a healthy to and fro from the population to the laboratory to the clinic and back again, the essence of Ansel Keys' physiological hygiene. There is, in fact, no predicting which of the three major research methodologies, clinical, laboratory, or epidemiological, will produce the next major stimulus to research or to the public health. The disciplines are complementary, interactive. Therefore, balance is required, balance in thinking, in influence, and in support. No less important than these direct contributions is the indirect role that epidemiological research plays in policy and in NIH funding through the delicate relationship between Congress, the NIH, and the scientific community. Directors of NIH have, over the years, come to appreciate that epidemiological studies, prevention trials, demonstration projects in communities, and risk factor control programs give them the happy opportunity to point with pride toward the practical outcomes of NIH research for the people. These programs are seen by Congress to benefit people directly. Epidemiology and prevention serve thereby to justify and to deflect criticism from the purist pursuit of mechanisms that value-free research so highly regarded. Finally, epidemiology provides the sound basis for an ethical and responsible public health policy based on the best evidence available at any given time. If the truth were known, it's often the epidemiologist called upon to synthesize this evidence derived from all research disciplines to point out its public health implications and to formulate policy recommendations. I believe that it's important for the community in medicine, having the care of patients as its primary mission, and for our academic colleagues concerned mainly with mechanisms to understand these major contributions of epidemiology, to put them in the context of the rapidly changing national picture of cardiovascular diseases. It is important that our academic leaders understand epidemiology as a complementary discipline, that they come around to support the goals of prevention, research, and policy, irrespective of their personal interest or participation in such undertakings. As the sole epidemiological type, among 20 or so distinguished members of the Heart, Lung, and Blood Advisory Council, I've come to believe that this much understanding is essential to the proper exercise of power. Our bench clinical colleagues derive their power from their numbers and status on the advisory and directive functions of all our research institutions. A natural tension between us is tolerable within a framework where there's mutual understanding about the three methods, that they're complementary, equally necessary, where there's competent peer review for each discipline, where there's appropriate expertise in policy-making positions, and when funding is balanced between areas. Under these conditions, leaders can negotiate fairly and appropriately about what is good science, what needs to be supported. When judgments made at high levels tend to go beyond or counter to competent peer review, whether this is driven by ideology, whether it's derived from formulae, or whether it's based on some natural law, then questions need to be asked and redress of any imbalance sought. This is the other purpose, then, my other purpose, then, for this afternoon.